This is the operator. Thank you for standing by. Recordings have started.
Thank you, Jeff. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the IRTP Part D Working Group call on the 18th of August, 2014. On the call today, we have Volker Greeman, Alan Greenberg, Barbara Knight, James Waddell, and Bartlett Morgan. We have apologies from Christine Dorain, Holly Raich, and Paul Diaz. From staff, we have Lars Hoffman, Barry Cobb, Marika Konings, Amy Bivens, Steve Chan, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would also like to remind participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, James.
Thank you, Terry, and welcome everyone to IRTP Part D Working Group for getting towards the end here. We're the 18th of August, and certainly thanks to those of you who may be participating, in a vacation or semi-vacation type mode. As per our usual sequence, could we please ask anyone that has any updates to their statements of interest to raise their hand now in the Adobe room or get my attention on the phone? Okay, hearing none, we'll then move on to take a look at the agenda, which is posted in the rightmost column of the Adobe chat screen. It was also circulated by Lars earlier. Anyone have any updates or amendments to that agenda? Okay, so we'll consider that agenda adopted. First off, just some housekeeping. I do apologize for missing last week's call. I was traveling the week before, and that's why. And I know there were a number of other folks that had conflicts, so we canceled, and then was fully expecting to return to action last week, but unfortunately had some very urgent last-minute travel pop up, and was actually in the air when this call was scheduled. So apologies for that. But it seems as though Lars and the rest of the group carried on. In my absence and in the absence of maybe perhaps some others. And so thanks for that, for those of you who kind of picked up the baton and marched it down the field a little bit further. So I think that we are now at the point where we are looking at our recommendations and we are discussing the level of consensus that we have achieved for each of those recommendations. And I think what we found, and I think this goes back to the publication in the run-up to our initial report, is that some of these are very non-controversial and enjoy widespread, if not unanimous, support from the members of the working group. Some of them maybe still need some massaging and have some different opinions. So let's dive in there. So I'm going to press upon Lars a little bit here, if he can kind of help us segue from last week's conversation into where we are now. Lars, where do we begin today?
Hi, James. Hey, everybody. Thank you for that. Well, last week it was more of a frontal discussion, really, me being at the front for the matter. So what I did in the week up running to last meeting is I filled in drafted some expected impact of the recommendations, which is it's a subsection for each of the charter questions. And so I just read through those, put them into context, and put them up for discussion to the group. There was not, they didn't seem to be very controversial. There was no objections to any of the wording. I suspect there need to be some wordsmithing still needs to go on. But if you want to, you could go through them again because I presume, well, you were obviously not on the call last week, so you might want to go through them again. And other than that, I have not received any updates on the list. I'm not sure whether Arthur is on the line. He's not in the AC room. He's joined the audio. I can just see what Terry just said. Arthur had promised some changes to the document that hadn't come through yet. So for that matter, we can go through the expected recommendations again and then move on to our suspects, deciding on how we want to do the consensus calls.
Okay, thank you, Lars. And I think that you're correct. Let's go ahead and go through the expected recommendations then. And are we testing for consensus at this point, or are we still just catching any last-minute edits. I'm sorry if I didn't, if that wasn't clear for me.
No, there were no edits have been made since last week. The only edit was what the discussion we had on the list with Holly about the executive summary, and that if you scroll up to page 2 or 3, I inserted that with track changes. The suggestions I made on the list that were approved by Holly. Other than that, no changes from last week.
Thank you. I do remember that Holly had had submitted some edits to the list as well. Okay, so we're starting then on which page, Lars?
Page 18. I scrolled through that already. I'm going to sync everybody just for a moment. So that is the expected impact of recommendations for the first charter question, which contains 2 recommendations.
Okay, thank you. And the expected impact is listed as 4.2.1.4. Which is what are we expecting as the impact of this this recommendation?
Yeah, of both recommendations. So what I've done is I've done the impact is just one subparagraph to all of the charter questions, which in some cases have more than one recommendation. So I put the recommendation. If the group wants it, there's obviously no problem having a paragraph for each of the individual recommendations.
I think it's fine to combine them. I think that Alan in the chat has asked if you could unlock the document so that we could scroll them ourselves. I think that, or unsync, or whatever the term is there, because I think that it was jumping around for me. I don't know if that was everyone else's experience as well. And then we'll just make sure everyone's following along at home. So we see 4.2.1.4, expected impact of these recommendations. I guess if we're combining them, we should pluralize the title. Working group expects to see an improvement in the visibility, transparency, and consisting of TDRP outcomes. I think we can say a little bit more here. We can say something along the lines in addition to this, we can say something along the lines of beginning to collect meaningful data and statistics regarding the use and effectiveness of this policy. Something along those lines, I think, would be a welcome addition, or at least I'm proposing that would be a meaningful addition and in keeping with our discussions on these charter questions. But I would I see a green check from Lars, but I want to make sure that others, no one objects to that in the working group as well. I don't see anything there. Does anyone else have any additions to the impact of these recommendations?
Hello? Can I say something? Arthur here?
Yes. Arthur, go ahead.
Hi. As perhaps gone unnoticed because of a certain mail server errors on the ICANN.org side, but I've submitted several comments and changes on the final draft two hours ago, and sent this to Lars. In this particular recommendation number 4.2.1.4, I agree with your addition, and I've added a fourth point or a fifth point to recommendation number 1, which is the domain name itself. In addition, I have a question about A, the information about parties involved in the dispute. What information are we talking about? The names, the email addresses, the phone numbers? Or what are we talking about?
So I think that if we're talking about the information about parties involved in the dispute, we did point out that the template for the Asian Domain Name Dispute Resolution Center was a good starting point, a good jumping off point, or a model that could be used for future reports. And so I think that that information is contained in those templates. When you say the domain name, do you mean that that is not currently, I think that's a given, but I think if it would make everyone feel more comfortable, then perhaps we should add that, Lars, as the first item or element that is required. So A would be the domain name under dispute, and then B would be information about the parties involved in the dispute, and then C and D.
Yeah, no problem. Just been checking
out. Okay, thanks, Lars. And I noticed Christine has her hand up, and I'm a little surprised. That must mean the doctor's appointment went very well. So, hello, Christine.
Hi, this is Christine from NASS. Yes, it went great. They removed the contact lens, and now we're good to go. So I just wanted
to
sort of answer Arthur's question. Thank you. I wanted to answer Arthur's question. So UDRP decisions and you know, pretty much all decisions run with the same template. Like we said, ADN DRCs are published, but, you know, we have decisions, too, that are available in template form that just aren't published. And the it's usually the name of the party and their location, so their city and country, or city, state, and country, or city, province, and country, however that works out, and then any legal counsel that they have. So that's typically all that's published. In fact, I don't know what ADN DRC does, but we go out of our way. If the panel inadvertently includes phone number or email address, we will redact that information out of the decision before issuing it. So it usually is not anything personally identifiable other than someone's name and location.
Okay, thank you, Christine. And does that correspond with the citation that we have here from ADN-DRC?
Yeah, I haven't actually looked at their decisions, but they're TDRP decisions, but their UDRP decisions are similar to ours. I have to guess that all of their templates, like ours, are pretty much similar along the line. So I would be very surprised if there was something different in the TDRP decision that is not in the UDRP decision.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other thoughts or additions to this section here, noting that Arthur stated that he had sent some changes to the list. I haven't seen them yet. I don't know if you know, we can have someone from staff take a look and see if those are stuck in an email queue somewhere. I haven't seen them either. Okay. So then let's move on to the impact, and I believe it begins, let's see, towards the bottom of page 21. Is that correct, Lars? This is for the recommendations, I believe, that are recommendations 3, 4, 5, and 6 regarding charter question B, which discusses essentially the how to handle disputes when there have been multiple transfers. So our expected impact of these recommendations are that the working group expects A, reduction in domains, hopping, and fraudulent transfers. I don't know that we can say that. I think that we can say that this will reduce the frequency. The group also expects more security for registrants. A notice of fraudulent transfers with sufficient time to alert the registrar to take appropriate action to remedy the situation. Agree. If you're not speaking, could you please mute your microphone? Please, we have some background noise. We're trying to it's been a little distracting. Thank you. Anyway, you know, I think that is an aspirational statement. We would hope that this would reduce the incidence of hopping and fraudulent transfers. We would hope that this, we would believe that this makes this process more secure. I don't know that we can state that this will be an expectation or an expected impact. So let me see if we can, or maybe maybe my thinking on this is just wrong. So let's go to the queue here. I have Alan up first. Go ahead.
Thank you. Well, I presume it's clear to say that we're making the recommendations because that's what we hope will happen.
Right.
Okay. So the real issue is in the word of the title. Either we are being asked for what we hope for or what our intent was, but expected is you know, we're being optimistic and saying we didn't do a stupid thing. Our discussions were right on, and this is what we expect. We may find we're wrong. So if expected is the right title, is the right word in the title, then it's the right word in the recommend in the text. If we want to soften the whole thing, then I think the title is overambitious.
Okay, thanks, Alan, for helping me reconcile the aspirational versus the expectational elements here. But
I mean, we may be deluded, but you know that's the nature of the beast.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time any working group set out with good intentions and didn't hit their target, but I think that we can still even make this a little bit more clear by saying something to the effect of the working group expects that the practice of domain name hopping will be less effective in evading the detection and correction of fraudulent transfers. So I think that would be something I would be more comfortable with because it doesn't say reduction of the incidence. It would just say that this type of behavior will be more visible and less effective. And I think that is something that we would hope would be the outcome of this policy. Because, we don't want to be dependent upon the influx of a new wave of dumb criminals that try to, that keep stepping into the policy traps that we're trying to set up to catch them. So I don't know if Lars, if that made sense, or if the working group maybe has some other members want to weigh in on this. But I think that what we're trying to say is we're trying to reduce the ability of bad guys to use this tactic, not that the use of it will decrease overall. That's a good point, Alan. We should probably work the word deterrent in there somewhere. Alan's chat said, presumably word will get out that we can catch them and then they will stop doing it. Lars, can you... Let's see here. Let's see if we can come up with some draft language here. Working group expects that the practice of domain name hopping will be less effective, become a less effective component for the conduct of fraudulent transfers. The group also expects improved security for registrants and greater visibility of fraudulent transfer, or greater or faster visibility of fraudulent transfers with sufficient time to contact their registrar and take appropriate action to remedy, and Aubrey proposed the term mitigate the situation. So I don't know if you caught all that, but I got a green check mark. Hey, fantastic. Let's go back to Alan.
Yeah, I like mitigation, but I think you hit on perhaps the key word that is deterrent, will act as a deterrent. So the combination of those words, I think, Lars should be able to craft something pretty well.
Okay. Yeah, I think we can massage that word in there as well, because once something becomes more effective, then bad guys will... Unfortunately, they'll develop a new practice, but at least it will deter them from continuing this one. So, Alan, did you add more? No? Barbara, you're up next.
Thank you, James. It's Barbara for the record. So I guess I'm a little bit confused. What specifically are we expecting to be the deterrent to the, to the hopping and fraudulent transfers?
So by decreasing the effectiveness of this practice as an evasive action, that will be the deterrent. The deterrent will be to not use this practice because it won't be as effective.
And by this practice, are we referring to the domain hopping?
Yes.
Okay, because I was under the impression that when we're locking the domain names is only after a TDRP case has been filed. Is that not the case? And by that point, it could have already happened. I think we still have the 60-day lock after a transfer or an initial registration. But if that's not, you know, if the lock is not happening, I guess, systematically in the case of a, you know, 60 days from the transfer, and if a registrar isn't actually putting a lock on the domain name for 60 days, I guess I'm just not sure what is the effective deterrent.
Okay, good points, good questions. Let's see if we can untangle that here. My thinking was that, and maybe I've got this wrong, but my thinking was that by expanding the statute of limitations in Recommendation 5 from 6 months to 12 months to file a TDRP, reduces the effectiveness of trying to cram in as many transfers as possible into that statute of limitations, because there's the clock is running for a much longer period of time, and so therefore trying to rapidly transfer the name does not seem to be as effective as an evasive tactic. And then the next bit being that I think it's going to recommendation number four, which is that it doesn't matter how many transfers have occurred subsequently if the first transfer was determined to be invalid, whether that was the first of 12 or the first of 30 or the first of 100, that it will still be returned to the registrar of record prior to the non-compliant transfer. So that essentially means that the piling on of subsequent transfers really had no effect. But I may be missing this, and certainly am open to reopening this. Not necessarily reopening the recommendations, but reopening our expected impact of this. Go ahead, Barbara.
Thank you, James. Barbara again. So I think that's probably the most effective deterrent, is the fact that, one, there is a longer period of time in which to file, you know, a transfer dispute case by moving it from 6 months to a year, and the fact that regardless of the number of transfers that have occurred in that now 1 year period of time, which could happen, literally every 2 months, the fact that the domain name, if the first transfer is found to be fraudulent, if all of the subsequent transfers would be undone, I think that's probably a better deterrent than, the locking of the domain name. So maybe we should be, a little bit more specific and really call that out as being what we would expect to deter the behavior.
Okay. Do you have any proposed language or where do you think we can insert that in the...
I can see if I can come up with some. I don't have any right off the top of my head readily available.
Well, just to avoid, having two people holding the pen and perhaps passing them up, why don't we see what Lars can come up with his first take, because I know he's got a couple of changes already captured. And then when he sends that report around, can we put you on the hook to take a look here at 4.2.2.4 and make sure that it captures what you're raising here, or modify it so that it does?
That sounds good. Thanks.
Okay, so that way we don't have two people, kind of writing past each other. Okay. Christine, you had a point you raised in the chat. Did you want to raise that as well, or?
No, this is Christine. Sorry, my mic is moving. I was just sort of trying to make an observation about whether whether we thought that this new improved version of the QDRP was going to serve as a proactive deterrent, or if it was just a better way for people to bring a dispute against the crooks that are already out there. I mean, are crooks currently considering the QDRP when they, engage in this nefarious activity? I think the answer is no. So that's why I was sort of quibbling with the word deterrent, I guess.
But yeah, thanks. It's a good point, and I think that it's only a deterrent if someone is aware of the policy and has some degree of respect for its efficacy, right? I think that the greater deterrent, in the event that there is a deterrent component, I think the greater deterrent is going to be the fact that the statute of limitations has increased. I think that is something that bad guys would, in fact, be aware of is, after 6 months, I'm in the clear. Oh, no, now I have to continue to hide from the previous, my victim and registrars and authorities. I have to continue evading them for another 6 months. I think that will be something that perhaps will be more effective. So that's just my observation. I don't believe that they are doing transfer hopping to avoid, just answering your question in the chat, I don't believe they're doing transfer hopping to avoid the TDRP. They're just using that to avoid detection. And but the statute of limitation will increase that or decrease that ability to get away with that sort of behavior. So the cue is clear. Good conversation, everyone. I think that we want to work the word deterrent in there. I think it is a good term, but I think that we need to be very careful, as this conversation is demonstrating, that we're very clear what we think is going to be the deterring factor, what behavior we are trying to deter, and why we think that that's going to be effective. And if we can't articulate those, then maybe we just need to stick with visibility and effectiveness and leave deterrent out of it. Because if we can't substantiate it and measure it, then it's probably just speculation on our part. And, it may feel good to say that, but if we can't prove it, then we should probably leave it out. So we'll wait for the next draft of this from Lars, and we'll all take a look, and Barbara especially, make sure that it captures your concern. Okay, moving then to charter question C, whether or not disputes for registrants should be developed and implemented. We, as a result of this charter question, we came up with, I'm scrolling, we spent a lot of time on this. We came up with recommendation 8, 9, 10, and 11, and 12. Oh, my. And then we have impacts of the recommendation. Just off the cuff, if I'm a reader or consumer of this report, I'm noticing that, the impact should be probably fleshed out a little bit more to be proportional to the number of recommendations and the length of deliberations and observations, but that's just maybe a style point. So I'll read this text as it stands first. Expected impact of these recommendations. The working group expects the development of inter-registrant transfer dispute resolution options in combination with the implementation of IRTP Part C. The working group also expects more transparent and consistent TDRP rulings through the discontinuation of the registry layer. However, whether this will create a barrier to access must be monitored. The working group expects that the user friendliness and consistency of the TDRP and IRTP ought to improve through the addition of the list of definitions, Annex F. So let's untangle this one. First off, the development of an inter-registrant dispute resolution option in combination with implementation of IRTP Part C. so, I think that ties back to which recommendation does that go with, Lars? That goes with the recommendation of 10, I believe. First off, I think that we should make sure that the impact statement is aligned with the sequence of the recommendations. So if we need to maybe restructure this so that the first thing it talks about is why we believe that this should be an inter-registrar dispute process and not something that can be initiated by registrants. I think that's, in other words, let's start with recommendation number 8 and then move to recommendation number 9 and then so on and so forth. So the first step would be the impact of, recommendation 8 in conjunction with recommendation 11. So I think that's the first step. I don't know if anyone has any proposed language, but we're reordering this now so that it makes a little bit more sense and tracks the recommendations a little more closely. So I think that we should say there that the working group expects that consistency, I don't use user-friendliness, I don't like that term. The working group expects that the TDRP will become more readily understood and consistently applied by removing the registry layer. And then we can say something like, particularly in light of the increased number of TLD registry operators. However, we expect, and I think this is an expected impact, we expect that this will be monitored to ensure that it is not creating a barrier of access to the registrant. So then, that covers kind of recommendation 8 and 11. We can then move to number 9. The working group expects that the broader internet community will better understand the IRTP and TDRP policies by providing this list of definitions, Annex F, something like that. And then you can move on to recommendation number 10, and that's the first part of our impact statement. So the working group expects that the implementation of IRTPC Part C will include the development of an inter-registrant transfer dispute option. Something like that. But considering that I'm also on that implementation team, that's a little scary. Barbara, you're up.
Thank you, James. Barbara, I'm wondering if it may make sense to flip recommendations 9 and 10 so that it goes from 8, where we're recommending not to develop a dispute option for registrants, to, number 10, where we're saying that recommends that staff in close cooperation with IRTP Part C implementation review team ensures that the Part C inter-registrant transfer recommendations are implemented. I almost think that they're fairly related.
Yeah, thanks, Barbara. I actually, if we're open to the idea of renumbering our recommendations, I think there's a better sequence here. And I think first and foremost, number 9 needs to be first. We'll move that up to the top. That's, you have your definitions before you dive in. And then I believe 8 and 10, become more closely related because that's, then that becomes like 9 and 10, and they're subsequent to each other. And then we and then perhaps we move 11. Do we leave that where it is, or do we move that up under? Yeah, I think we would leave that where it is then. Okay, I saw a green check mark from somebody, but it went away before I could. Oh, and there it is again, and it's Barbara. Thank you, Barbara. So, Lars, did you catch all that? I think that we're trying to renumber the recommendations a little bit here so that those that are related and interdependent are more closely attached to each other, and then also make sure that the expected impact of the recommendations tracks that sequence. Have we thoroughly confused Lars yet?
James, no, this is Lars. Thank you. No, no problem. I've tracked it, and I'll reorganize for the next round. No problem.
Okay. Thank you, Lars. And yes, we're not trying to trick you, but if it feels that way, well, apologies. So, what else do we want to include here in the impact? Generally, I think that we need to flesh this out a little bit more. Because I think that we spend a lot of time on these particular recommendations, and I'm concerned that we're just kind of checking the box without really considering the impacts that I know we discuss in our observations. So perhaps we can go back to the observations as well, and take a look at what we considered the risks and hazards and unintended consequences of these changes might be. And see if we can at least give a passing mention to them in this impact statement. Okay, then moving on to charter question D, whether recommendations or best practices should be put in place for registrars to make information on transfer dispute options available to registrants, resulting in recommendations 13 and 14, which everyone knows and loves. It's about web pages and links and all kinds of fun stuff like that. Expected impact of the recommendation. Working group expects greater visibility and user-friendliness, support and help options, both on the ICANN website and homepage of ICANN-accredited registrars and their resellers. This is probably fine as a one-sentence expected impact. I think that we maybe can, I just am not a big fan of user-friendliness as a term because I think it's not really that descriptive. But I would say the working group expects by highlighting the visibility of support and help options and educational materials, that will improve understanding of registrants, something like that. Alan has his hand up, so he wants to take a whack at this. Go ahead, Alan.
Thank you. 14 is probably the only recommendation that the ALAC will not be agreeing with. The making it a best effort or making it a best practice, which has no real coercion properties for registrars, and then for resellers saying, pretty please put it there, I do not believe is going to have a significant impact. And therefore, this is one case where I think the expected impact is far too optimistic. I'm also, by the way, not a good fan of user-friendliness, but the overall expectation, I think, is far more optimistic, given that the group has decided not to make this a recommendation that ICANN have enforceable in the RAA. So I really think, I certainly can't support the expectation that it's going to change anything, certainly on the ICANN website, but not on registrars and resellers.
Well, that raises an interesting – thank you, Alan. That raises an interesting question, which is if you don't support the recommendation, can you support the impact statement? I guess the answer is probably not. You probably disagree with the recommendation because of the impact statement.
Well,
you disagree with the impact statement.
I personally, and I've talked to Holly about this, feel that this is in 2014, with the kind of statements that are already in the RAA for other requirements to post things, that this one should be in a similar form, that is, it's a mandated requirement to post. Given that the work group has chosen not to go that direction, I think the expectation is optimistic.
Okay. Thanks, Ellen. And I think that is it safe to say that you and when I say you, I mean ALAC,
yeah,
believe that because they believe that unless something is enforceable through a contractual obligation, that registrars won't do it.
Some registrars won't do it, but you know,
it needs
it's
to
the
be
same sort of story. Good guys will do it, bad guys won't,
to be universal in order to be effective.
And certainly for the resellers, registrars making a, I don't remember what the exact words are, making a best efforts to ask resellers to do it, is a pretty weak commitment.
Okay, I guess I'm trying to say is that
sorry,
there will be no improvement on this until it is, you know, 100% adopted. Or can you say that there will be some improvement?
To put it personally, I have full expectation that you'll go home and put it on your website. I don't necessarily have expectation that it would be universal, and certainly at the reseller level, it would be almost nil.
Okay, so let me just say hypothetically here, and I don't mean to belabor this point, but what I'm getting at here is if let's say the top 25 or top 50 largest registrars do go out and adopt this and do this, does that not yield the expected impact that there would be greater visibility of support and help options? I mean, just putting it on ICANN's website should accomplish that. I'm just challenging the idea that it has to be mandatory.
Okay, I'll take what you're saying, that it will increase visibility. The number will go up because it's maybe close to zero right now.
If it goes from zero to say 50%, that's an increase in visibility.
That's true. Technically,
but
it is correct.
But an acknowledgement that it is something short of perfection or total coverage, right?
Well, and perhaps short of being really effective, because we know that these practices are not universal across all registrars.
Right.
They're not all subjected to them, because some make it easier for malfeasance to do things and some don't.
Right. Yeah, those registrars who are currently, yes, so. Okay, well,
I grant you, the wording is accurate, but I think sends a message stronger than what I believe is likely to really happen. So I've registered my comment. I'll be quiet now for a while.
No, it is a good point. But I want to make sure that, I want to make sure that we're not saying something that's completely and wholly incompatible with the ALAC position.
No, I think it sends an incorrect message, but it's not technically inaccurate.
All right. Well, maybe we'll take that and run. Okay. Next up is Volker. Go ahead, Volker.
Yeah, just one point with respect to this issue. I mean, the current RAA already requires us to link to the benefits and responsibility and the rights and responsibilities documents, both of them, as they are published by ICANN. Wouldn't it be more intuitive to have a link to the information that we want to link to, that we want to have a link to, also on the ICANN webpage, i.e., require ICANN to at the top of the page or at the side, add a box. You might also be interested in help for XYZ for transfer disputes and whatever. So to put it somewhere where there's already a link for registrant rights, because that's clearly something that's related.
Thanks, Volker. So you're saying instead that we would be actually adding to Recommendation 13 in this respect, we would be saying that the one-stop web page should be accessible or reachable via the Registrant Rights and Responsibilities page. Is that what you're driving at there, sir, or...?
Yes, I think that's pretty much it. It should be just because if we have a process that displays relevant information, then maybe we should just include them in the rights and responsibility as well, has right, certain rights with respect to, or this is where you get help for, yeah, put it on the ICOM webpage, put a link there, where there's already a link from the registrars and from the resellers as well, because resellers are already required to link to the rights and responsibilities in the benefits page. So just
so also address Alan's statement by, you know, by de facto putting it on the page that they're already required to link to, then this best practice effectively becomes a mandatory contract obligation, correct?
Exactly.
Just kind of backdoor.
And you may also have an additional link on your webpage as a best practice as well, but as it's already linked from the rights and responsibility, we would not need that as a mandatory requirement.
Yeah, I understand. The only thing, I support that. I think that I'm kind of mixing my personal take with the, you know, with facilitating this dialogue, and it's probably a no-no, but no one's called me on it yet, so we'll just kind of keep going. But you know, I think that that is interesting. The only thing is I've been reluctant to reopen the recommendations language at this time, just focusing on the impact statements. But if that's something that everyone in the group supports, and it seems, you know, fairly non-controversial, then I'm fine with that. I just I want to be sure that everyone is recognizing that we're not changing the impact statement now. We're changing the text of the recommendation itself. Just want to make sure that everybody is aware of that and is okay with that approach. So I guess any objections to changing recommendation 13 to note that this information should be reachable from that registrant rights and responsibilities or registrant benefits and responsibilities area, which registrars and resellers are already required to link to. I think everybody's saying that's fine. And Alan, hopefully you can go back to ALAC and say, hey, everybody, got some good news.
Well, if I may, I wasn't expected to change the outcome, and I'm delighted with what Volker has proposed. Just a note that in the wording, if I remember correctly, there are confusingly two different documents that the RAA requires registrars to point to. One, and I think resellers for both cases, one is called Registrants' Rights and Responsibilities. The other is called Registrants' Benefits and Responsibilities. One came out of the 2009 RAA and one out of the 13, and they were never quite rationalized.
Well, one was community developed and one was...
Yeah.
Yes.
The first one wasn't community developed.
Oh, wow.
There's a third one. That's that one that registrars don't point to, if I remember correctly. Both the other ones were created by ICANN. Remember,
so,
the 2009 one said, if I can ever develop such a thing, then you must point to it.
You know, Alan, yes, there are multiple documents floating around out there that call themselves this. This is a problem. I don't know that it's going to be solved. But yes, it is something, and it is something that I will tell you that registrars raised during the RAA negotiations when this new one started to surface is, hey, wait a second, I thought we already had this, you know, so, yes.
Yeah,
I
wasn't trying to fix that ugly part, although someone should one day. I was just saying that when we do the wordsmithing of the rewording, make sure that we're pointing to a document which is, in fact, fully mandated. I don't much care which it is, but just make sure that we're not incorrectly using the terms rights and
responsibilities. I agree that we should be precise in what we're calling it, and the good news for Lars is I think they're both required to be
I think they are too.
Linked.
I think they are too.
So I think that, you know, it's yes, but I agree that somebody someday needs to figure out which document we're talking about.
Correct. And 14 probably needs to be reworded to say in addition as a best practice, or just drop it altogether.
Yeah. Okay, so that was fun.
Thank you.
All right, so let's see if I can scroll back down. I would say yes, so let's change the language of 14. The working group recommends that as an additional best practice. ICANN accredited registrars, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Then, moving to charter question, did I skip one? Are we on charter question E now? No, that's right, we're on E. Okay. Thought I skipped D, but charter question E, whether existing penalties for policy violations are sufficient or if additional provisions, penalties for a specific violation should be added into the policy. Observations, and that yielded recommendations 15 and 16. Working group recommends no additional penalty provisions be added to the existing policy. The working group recommends the genome consensus policy avoid policy-specific sanctions. Rather, sanctions should be consistent throughout policies and parts of three part of the RAAs, as in the case of 2013 RAA. Expected impact. The working group expects to see a general discontinuation of policy-specific sanctions. I don't know that I don't disagree, but I don't think that that's currently going on now, except, hold on, the add grace period limits has a specific sanction in that it has a fee structure associated with excessive deletions during the add grace period. So I think that is a policy example of, and as far as I know, it's the one and only example of a policy-specific sanction. So, as a working group, are we saying that we want that to change? I think what we're trying to say is the working group expects to see consistent application of uniform sanctions for policy violations in new policies developed, something like that. Because I don't think we're saying we want to go back and pull that out of add grace period. Maybe I'm overthinking this. Anybody want to weigh in on that, Barry? Go for it.
Thank you, James. This is Barry for the record. And I know we don't want to revisit editing these recommendations, but the way 16 is worded seems very general and all when our scope or context is in regards to the transfer policy. So somehow should this be narrowed down so that it aligns with the scope of this working group? Yeah, because as you pointed out, you know, maybe future policies could be developed and that there is agreement that there could be some sort of specific sanction based on that policy. But seems to make it generic that this will never allow it to happen again. James, you may be on mute, unless I stumped you.
I'm sorry. I had some really brilliant things to say, too. You guys missed it. So what I was going to say is it's a good point, and I think that we did capture that or try to thread that needle a little bit by saying avoid as opposed to some sort of something stronger like prohibit or whatever. But if we need to make that clearer so that we're comfortable, because I think that you are correct, this working group does not have the authority to put that constraint on future policy development working groups. So if there's some way we can say that, you know, as a guidance for future working groups, you know, we recommend that policy specific sanctions be avoided unless, you know, determined to be absolutely necessary or something like that. Alan's going to bail me out here. Go ahead, Alan.
No, I'm not going to bail you out. I'm going to add to the confusion. This is one of the recommendations which, as I was reviewing it, not having really taken part in most of the discussions, I was willing to accept but didn't understand. If some future PDP, you're right, we don't have the authority to bind the GNSO to do anything. We can provide words of guidance which some future work group can ignore or not. But if some future work group decides on specific sanctions associated with a specific policy, then it inherently becomes part of the RAA, and you know, and therefore 16 no longer applies. And whether it's consistent or not with the with all policies depends on, you know, how onerous this particular infraction is and what the penalty is. So I'm not sure this really says a lot. But maybe
so,
I'm missing some Bacor substance, you know. That,
well, you know, I don't think you're missing any big issue here, Alan. I think that you there is a little bit of context, though, that we're skipping over, perhaps, which is that you know, when this was proposed, the 2001 RAA was prevalent, and it was noted that compliance, you know, part of the complaint was this outdated issue that compliance didn't have anything in their toolkit except termination. They didn't have ways to enforce consensus policy except to terminate them, and so the charter for this working group came included some language about maybe take a look at what short of termination what could be done as far as sanctions. And I think what we were saying as a working group is that the newer versions of the RAA are a little bit more evolved and give compliance some other levers to pull short of termination, and that therefore, since these new RAAs have a built-in sanctions structure, it's not necessary for that to be reinvented on a per-policy or per-PDP basis. Now, I don't know if that's something you guys can support, but that's, to me, that's where this is, that's the genesis of this. So, go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, I guess from, again, a perspective of someone diving into this far too late, if we got extra pay for the number based on the number of recommendations we made, 15 and 16 would be quite good things. Given that we don't, I'm not sure what they're really adding. I don't object to them, but I don't really.
Well,
see
15
what,
at a minimum, in my opinion, 15 at a minimum has to be there because that's one of the charter questions that we were asked to.
Well, yes,
address.
But that means we make a decision not to make a recommendation. We don't need a recommendation not to do something.
okay, I mean, that's one way of looking at it.
That's,
feel
his,
like,
that's
you know,
his style, and I said I'm not objecting to it.
I disagree. Just personally, I think if your charter asks you a specific question, you should, even if the answer is in the negative, or
James,
even if
James,
you refuse
we have this. We have disagreed on far more onerous things than this.
Well, and I'm sure we will again. So I feel like at a minimum 15 needs to be in there. Now, if the working group wants to revisit the, you know, the legitimacy of 16, I think that was something that we kind of arrived at fairly early and landed on fairly strongly. But if the winds have shifted on that, I'm certainly willing to revisit that. But I don't know if we had – the queue is clear, Alan, so I guess that means nobody except for you and I really care that much.
Yeah, and I don't care that much, but it lacks clarity, and I, you know, I like things that are are concise and easily understandable by someone reading them after the fact, and all most people are going to do is read the recommendations, not the full body
right.
of the report.
That is, that's ICANN Survival Tip 101. I noticed that we are at the end of our time here. I'm just going to weigh in here. I think that both recommendations are fine. I think that recommendation 15 answers the question, and recommendation 16 does no harm. Perhaps we can add, you know, the working group recommends that GMSO consensus policies avoid policy-specific sanctions, you know, comma, where possible or where feasible or, you know, not at all costs, but just something like, unless it absolutely must make sense or something. And then it waters it down to the point where Alan's position starts to become clearer, which is why it's there at all. But going back to the impact statement, I think that the working group expects to see, you know, no transfer-specific sanctions resulting from this policy, and, you know, we can just leave it short and sweet like that. We've got two folks in the queue now. We're at the top of the hour. I will indulge them if the rest of the group can hang on for just a little bit, and I know they'll be brief. Barry, go for it.
Thank you, James. I posted into the chat. I'm curious whether we need or whether the working group should consider to be a hint more specific and throw in the IRTP policy. You know, again, that is only the scope of this working group. This takes it out greater. So I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Yeah, Barry, I think that's a helpful intervention to be specific about which policy we're referring to. I don't have any objections to that. And Alan, you get the last word.
I'm happy with what Barry said. A question, have we had a lot of policy-specific sanctions coming out of working groups, of PDPs? If not, then I don't think we can see a discontinuation of them. I can't recall any off the top.
Yeah, that was my concern with that as well, because that really what we need to do is we're saying 4.2.5.4, and this is to Lars, is the current text is reflective on Recommendation 16, which we all have agreed is very mushy at best. We really need to just take 4.2.5.4 and change the impact to focus on Recommendation 15 and leave it at that, and not speculate on what future PDPs will do. I would be happier with that, and I think maybe if we can capture that, that'll make a lot more sense. And a green check mark from Lars, and that's how we're going to close it for today. So thank you, everyone, for a very productive and spirited discussion as we continue to slog our way through this report. We are getting near the end. I would say that with that in mind, those of you who still have contributions or changes or edits, the clock is ticking on making sure you get those in before the in order to make sure that we have ample time to discuss them as a group. So with that, we'll adjourn for today, and thanks, everyone, and see you next week.
That concludes today's conference. All participants may now disconnect.